Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. We're doing mailbag tomorrow. Every single Wednesday, we do mailbag. So make sure you get your voicemails, your text messages in at 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back on this Tuesday, here to talk a little bit about Summer League, talk about Carter's injury as well, which both of us haven't gotten a chance to really dive deep into that. And also I want to ask you a couple other things about Bulls' potential moves, maybe with OKC, and some other rumors that are going around with this Bulls team. But what's going on? How you doing today?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Doing well. Looking forward to talking about a little bit of some Summer League highlights, some Gafford action, some Kobe White action. Although I did think that social media took the quote-unquote ankle breaker that Kobe White had in their second Summer League game a little too far. Like, it was cool, and he hit the step back, and it was great, but it was like, all right, this wasn't like an Allen Iverson-caliber crossover. Y'all need to chill.
Yeah, and I felt that way about the first game where the Kobe White to Daniel Gafford dunk was sick. But some of the other Gafford dunks, people were making him out to be like the next Shaquille O'Neal with all of these massive dunks. I'm like, all right, everybody, it's Summer League. Let's kind of relax here. Let's take a step back and realize the competition level here, and just take a deep breath, because we did this about Carter last year too. Remember, Carter had an amazing Summer League, blocking shots left and right, knocking down shit on the offensive side of the ball. So yeah, let's just, with a grain of salt, massive grain of salt, let's calm down a little bit about Summer League. But yeah, let's start with the two Summer League games.
It's often misguided and misleading. Like, I think it was my buddy Mark Straubman over at NBC who pointed out that Marquise Teague, his Summer League stats just blew Derrick Rose's Summer League stats out of the water. So you never know.
Fucking Marquise Teague. Yeah, and how about Jerry and Grant winning Summer League MVP when the Bulls won the Summer League championship just a few years ago?
Banners, baby. Banners. So, and
look where Jerry and Grant is at. So yeah, that's where you kind of have to look at it and see, like, the guys that ball out in Summer League usually aren't the guys that turn around and are potential superstars in the NBA. So but let's talk about these two games really quick. I had mentioned that first opening play, which was awesome, from Kobe White to Daniel Gafford. They asked him after the game, too. They asked Kobe White if that was something that they had planned. And Kobe said, yeah, you know, we talked about it. We said if it's open, let's dish it out. But if it isn't, not that big of a deal. So I like that they thought about that, like the first couple opening plays, that they were going to have something set up so they could do sort of a lob. And they connected, and it was electric.
It was great, you know, and there's the excitement of, like, thinking about that exact play and that duo for years to come. You know, I'm sure that's sort of how everybody felt about it, because it's the new age Lob City, but bigger and better than CP3 to Blake and DeAndre ever was. It was genuinely, you know, cool though. Yeah, was it blown out of proportion a little bit? Of course. It's Summer League, and you know, basketball fiends and Bulls fans fiends are already starved for content and like, oh my God, there's basketball on again. Let's overanalyze every little bit of this. But, you know, it is awesome to see in action and in a Bulls Summer League jersey, Daniel Gafford doing some of the things that were on, you know, his college highlight reel and some of the things that he's able to do running the floor and finishing at the rim, which is exactly the DNA of the player that we knew him to be when we did our homework on him when the Bulls took him. And then same thing with Coby White, a guy who is really excited to go out there and push the pace. And, you know, Summer League is a good time to still have the training wheels on and playing games that don't actually really matter but are still competitive. And, you know, deal with the fact that in their second Summer League game from the other night, he had like 7 turnovers. Well, when you're a young player who's being instructed to go out there and play fast, that's going to happen.
Yeah, definitely. And 7 turnovers, shit, man. That's what's going to happen, though. It's going to take a little bit of time to develop those skills, and you're going to have mistakes being made like that. Just going back to the lobs, for example, it's nice that we have a competent guard that can throw lobs. That was the biggest complaint I had, and I was excited when Otto Porter was here. It's like, now we finally have a dude that, in transition, actually knows how to throw lobs, because we have a lot of dudes that are jump out the gym athletic on this Bulls team, and nobody could throw lobs to them. Zach LaVine is one of the best dunkers in the NBA. We don't have a damn guard that can throw him a lob once in a while. Now we actually do. We've got two guys. You got Coby White and we got Otto Porter Jr. So I think I'm thrilled about that, because we're going to see a lot more Zach LaVine charging the rims, Coby White lobs, and Zach LaVine finishes. So I think we're going to see a lot of highlights.
Before that,
plays.
Like, the most efficient lob duo the Bulls had was like Pau lobbing to Jimmy. Remember when that was a phase that we had?
Dwayne Wade to Cristiano Felicio.
Oh, God. Rolling to the rim with force. Our old pal Felicio.
Oh, my God. But yeah, other than that, you know, Daniel Gafford, I think people kind of a little bit eye opened by his performance in the first game. And he had a double double to kick off his summer league debut, which was cool to see. But I think just people around NBA circles too that were following summer league pretty closely now have said, damn, didn't know Daniel Gafford had this type of skill. Didn't know he could run the floor the way he could. Didn't know he had this type of athleticism. And again, this is why we talked about this as soon as they drafted him, why we were so excited about his potential at 38. They got him at 38 in the second round. So it was cool to see that some national talking heads in terms of basketball were talking about him in a high light and saying, I think he's going to be pretty underrated.
Yeah. And, you know, we kind of talked about that in one of our episodes soon after the draft, is the fact that he is a guy who decided to go back and play a second year at Arkansas when people were talking about him as a first round draft pick a year ago. And the fact that it was kind of a surprise to several people, Gafford included, himself included, that he fell and ended up being a second round pick, which, you know, I'm sure would only motivate him further to prove people wrong at the next level. And then, as you know, as far as what Bulls fans should and can expect to see from him in his rookie year, I would say, again, seeing him and Coby playing that two-man game and lobs and the dunks and summer league is a lot of fun, and you could certainly enjoy it and get excited about it. But, I mean, this is a team that also added Thaddeus Young, a veteran who's, yes, coming in to offer leadership, but also coming in to play some real minutes as a guy who could be a competent two-way player for depth in that front court behind Lowry and Wendell. And also, low-key, added Luke Kornet, a solid 7-1 stretch front court guy who, you know, I don't think they're signing him for him to sit at the end of the bench. I think they'd like him to contribute, you know, as a front court shooting option as well. So Gafford is not going to be a guy who plays close to 82 games this season, I don't think. I think you're going to see him being involved in a good amount of Windy City action this season, too.
Yeah, I think so, too. We were talking off mic about this as well. I think we're going to see him spend the majority of time with the Windy City Bulls this season, which isn't that big of a deal. Like, we're still taking the Russell Westbrook trade out of your mind for a minute, and we're still in rebuild mode here. I mean, we want to be more competitive next year, so adding a Daniel Gafford and trying to get him out there when he still has a lot of raw skills, it's probably not the best move for this Bulls team, and that's why you see the depth in the front court, why they signed Luke Kornet, why they signed Thaddeus Young. So I think if there isn't injuries that happen to this Bulls team, he'll spend most of his time in Hoffman Estates this year, which is totally fine. You should be totally fine with that. He can develop down there and just actually get some playing time. Consistent playing time is the biggest thing for young guys. So him doing that down in the G League is not really that big of a deal. It's funny looking at his shot chart, though. Everything coming around about 3 feet from the rim, which is exactly what we told you guys would happen with Gafford. So yeah, very excited about both of these guys. And I think just Coby White's ball handling, it was cool to hear Coby White talk about the fact that a lot of people talked about him not being able to be a playmaker, and that's something that he wants to focus on and showcase. So that's good to hear too, is like he is hearing some of the criticism and some of the weaknesses about his game, and he automatically wants to start to get better at that. And I think if he can turn into a playmaker, and you still have Zach LaVine here, and Zach LaVine can be a playmaker too, that is really good for this Bulls team. So cool to hear that he's focused on his weaknesses and wants to improve on those.
Well, yeah, and you know, as I mentioned, he has had a pretty high turnover rate so far in their first couple summer league games. But you know, he's also shown that he can push the pace and pass the ball. Honestly, if there's a big glaring weakness to his first couple of summer league games, it's the fact that he can't hit a three, which is
right.
Not you know in line with what we knew him to be. He was a pretty reliable shooter at the three-point line at the college level. And most people believe that he's got the form and he's got the shooting ability to be able to be at least a competent three-point shooter at the NBA level as well. And it's just kind of like a weird fluky thing. You know, maybe it's the summer league ball, maybe it's the hoops, whatever, whatever, or he's just in a slump. But in their first two games, I'm pretty sure he went a combined 0-for-11 from behind the three-point line. So
yeah,
if and when that part of his game comes around, which I assume it will, then you're talking about a guy who can – do it all, which is what we kept hearing that, you know, the Bulls front office and Borland talk about as far as why they were so excited to get Coby White, is that he can be, again, it's that word versatility. He can be their point guard who leads the offense, and he can also play off the ball because they're relying on him and expecting him to be a threat playing off the ball as well.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest concern so far. And I think it's just now mental that more than anything else going to this third game is being 0-for-11 from three. You might see him try to force some just to knock that first one down. But yeah, that's definitely one of the concerns. But again, just summer league. So I think it's more jitters and like trying to get that first three to knock down more so than anything else. He had mentioned that right before the game against the Cavs, is he said, I hope more shots go down now, especially threes, than they did in the last game. So because he knocked his first shot down, then missed the six consecutive shots after that against that Lakers team. So yeah, I think probably mostly mental at this point right now than anything else. But anything else around summer league in general that you thought? I thought it was crazy, the whole earthquake thing that happened on Friday night when the Knicks and the Pelicans were playing and we saw Zion versus RJ for a little while. But that was wild, man. These earthquakes have been ridiculous, and it halted all of the games, and they suspended the rest of the ones on Friday just because the stadium was shaking. And you saw a lot of NBA players reacting to that too, the ones that were in Vegas for summer league as well.
Yeah, I also thought it was funny that I think it was in Casey Johnson's recap of their second summer league game where he also got a quote from Boylan about the earthquakes that were going on the first night. And yes. Boylan just, you know, went on this like long-winded rant about how much he loves earthquakes because they're so like, you know, such a crazy force of nature. I'm pretty sure he called them awe-inspiring. I was like, ridiculous. Yo, Jim, people die in these earthquakes, man. Maybe like chill out about how like, dude, earthquakes are so cool. They're just, you know, it's just a great display of power and Earth's beauty. And I'm like, it was so in character with who we know Jim Boylan to be. I was not at all surprised to hear him waxing poetic about an earthquake, but I was like, Jimmy, buddy, come on now.
Yeah, from our buddy from Sean Hyken who grabbed this quote, Jim Boylan was extremely on brand when talking about the earthquake. Here's Jim Boylan. I just think it's the awesome power of nature to think that something can move that building that much. It's awe-inspiring to me.
Yeah,
that is a classic Jim Boylan quote right there.
You know, we got bulls across our chest, and
so dude, funny.
Earthquake showed so much pure heart and so much spirit and so much grit and toughness. That like earthquakes, just so much toughness.
The honors, the essence of the team.
Earthquakes are wearing earth across their chest, right?
You know, we got bulls across our chest, and
do they wear earth or do they wear quake across their chest?
Yeah, right. So it just, that was the most classic Jim Boylan quote. We shouldn't have expected anything less, but Jim Boylan looking a little swaggy out there too at Summer League, you know, showing off his fits. I think, remember when he first became the Bulls head coach and he was talking about travel plans and he's like, yeah, my wife, she was doing most of the packing for me and she was figuring out the outfits I was going to wear. So credit to Jim Boylan's wife for getting him a little bit swagged out at Summer League this year.
Yeah, and speaking of Bulls coaches and swag, really quickly, had to mention the picture that Fred Hoiberg posted on Twitter on the 4th of July of his family, his wife, their kids, sitting on a pontoon boat on a lake somewhere. And, like, he and all of his sons are, you know, just, like, in swimming trunks and shirtless, and they all have the same chiseled Hoiberg abs across the entire picture. And, you know, his wife looks great. I don't know if it's a daughter or maybe one of his son's girlfriends or whatever. There's another girl in there. And everybody, it's just like the most Midwestern-looking picture ever on the 4th of July. And they're drinking Michelob Ultra and they're drinking White Claw. And I was like, this is the most Hoiberg family picture that it could possibly be. Like, it just looks so Hoiberg-y. Speaking of coaches getting their swag on, if you haven't seen that picture, the Hoiberg posted on the 4th, go look at it. Because you'll look at it and be like, this is exactly what I expected the Hoibergs to be doing on the 4th of July.
He looks a lot happier than he was 8 months ago.
Hell yeah, dude. He was
he's white,
the
white
king
as a goat.
Big red country right now.
Yes, that's for sure. But shout out to Michelob Ultra and White Claw if they want to sponsor Locked On Bulls here. We love that.
Yeah. Those folks with those chiseled abs, that's how they have those chiseled abs, because they drink nasty, poisonous alcohol with zero calories in it.
Michelob Ultra with the lowest carbs out of any beer out there, 2.6 carbs. That's why they're drinking it.
And
no carbs.
The highest gag-inducing reflux.
But yes, Michelob Ultra, if you want to sponsor us, we love you here. So
yeah,
yes.
Just kidding about that gag joke. I love Michelob Ultra. I drink it every day.
Oh man, so yeah, that was cool. That was cool to see. It's cool the reaction from Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams when they found out about the Kawhi trade. Patrick Beverley is just in the casino with Lou Williams and they're like, don't talk to me right now. You know that they celebrated pretty handily over the weekend after that deal went down. And I wonder if Patrick Beverley had any idea that this was going down. I assume that he had some idea that Kawhi would be ending up here, and that's why he went back to the Clippers. So yeah, very good for him as well. Let's go on to Carter's injury. Talking about Carter for a second, because we didn't get a chance to talk about this, Matt, but core muscle injury for him, and he had to have surgery this past week. That's pretty much going to limit his entire offseason. And they said he's going to be ready for training camp and can do some light stuff, but pretty much going to eliminate any offseason that he has so far. Any concern level here and not having a full offseason to work and train at 100%, does that give you any concern for what is going to happen for this second season for him after already missing 40-odd games this past season?
Yeah, I mean, like, of course there's concern because this is a guy who missed, you know, about basically half his rookie season because of a thumb injury. And it was a real disappointment because he was starting to show some really positive signs his rookie year on both ends of the floor. He had, you know, his coming out party games where he was scoring a lot of points and, of course, you know, had his rebounds and his blocks going on and all that jazz. So to see this news about Wendell was a real bummer. And of course it's a concern because of this team's recent track record with injuries and how maybe it's this thing that the fan base keeps harping on, that it's, you know, there's gotta be some turnover with their medical staff. You know, even though Chip Schaefer's like one of the most highly respected guys across the league, he's been doing it a long time. You know, I think less so with Jeff Tanaka. He doesn't have quite the level of accolades and respect around the league that Schaefer does, but like it seems like it's something more than a coincidence at this point. That's why the fan base is just, you know, crying out for some turnover with people holding these jobs, whose jobs it is to keep these players healthy and on the court. So yes, it's a concern. To me, like, And again, you know, this is coming from the guy who was cracking jokes this time last year about how, oh, Denzel's, you know, sitting out and he's day to day with the whatever. And I told you on this podcast, I was like, dude, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play at all this season. And that's exactly what happened. So trying to not be cynical and looking at it that way, I am hoping and I'm optimistic that Wendell will be available when real basketball starts happening in a couple of months. But to me, it's still concerning and it's still really bad because it's not necessarily all about his availability. And will Wendell Carter Jr. be ready to go for real basketball come mid-October? It's the losing out on development this summer and losing out on his time in the weight room, building up his body a little bit and losing time working in the gym and working on his offensive game and all the facets that he was going to try to improve upon. So basically while he's rehabbing this for 8 weeks or whatever the timeline is, that's missed opportunities to be developing his game and trying to come into a clean, healthy second season. That's what I really don't like about this.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of those things. Just the idea that he doesn't have a full offseason to train now. The one thing that is a little bit reassuring is that this seems to be a pretty common injury across the NBA and just in sports in general. Just looking back to see who has a sports hernia, that's basically what this injury is.
Right.
Sports hernia. And Adrian Peterson had one. And talking about the NFL, Donovan McNabb, a lot of really elite stars in the NFL have had these, have come back and bounced back from them and have been really good. Guys in the NBA, most recently, LeBron James, he was dealing with this too, with this Lakers injury as well. James Johnson, another former Bull playing for the Heat, he had a sports hernia too. Darren Williams, Brandon Knight, other guys that have had dealt with this before. So it seems like all of those players seem to be bouncing back and are still being able to play at 100%. Avery Bradley, another player, and Jamal Murray too was most recently one that was playing through a sports hernia. So at least it happened the offseason where he can have the surgery, he can rest, recover, and come back to training camp, hopefully at 100%. But I think it puts a little bit more of a concern on, is Wendell going to now start to be injury prone? Like, I really hope that that's not the case with a guy that's only going to be 20 years old coming into this season. That would be my biggest concern here, is now we start to develop all of these freak injuries and it just continues down the line. So I'm hoping that that's not the case. But yeah, I think development wise, it might set his development back at least maybe a year or so, which isn't the end of the world considering his age.
Yeah, he is still very young, and that's something that you should always keep in mind. This isn't enough for me to start worrying about, well, is he injury prone? Because the injury that knocked him out of this season, and, you know, it's kind of like weird and fluky in the same ways that, you know, and we've been pretty hard on Chris Dunn recently, but I have also said, look, the fact that he can't stay on the court is not entirely his fault. It's just the reality of the situation. But when, you know, he fell on his face after that dunk and, you know, was, you know, had some teeth knocked out and was concussed and missed a big chunk of the season that way. Wendell's injury was like he sprained his thumb and it turned out to be a little bit more serious than a sprain when he was just like bracing himself when he was falling. When he was, you know, I think it was like he was, you know, battling for a rebound or whatever it was. Maybe he was going up for a block. I can't remember, but I do remember that it happened because he was just essentially bracing himself on a fall. So, you know, to say injury prone because that happened and he's got a bum thumb and now there's a sports hernia issue, I'm not ready to say that, well, we need to start talking about Wendell being an injury prone player yet. It's more to me just the bummer that, you know, as you were saying, the development, we'll see. Hopefully he still takes a step forward this season and hopefully still has a healthy season, including being ready to go day one of training camp. But it's, you know, it's time lost. Yeah, he's young and it's not a giant concern yet, but there's no other reality than it is time lost when it comes to development and Wendell working on his game and working on his body in the gym this summer. So in that sense, it is still very much a bummer.
Well, he was in their building. So this happened while he was training.
That's all that matters, man.
Add strength to the Bulls, to his body, but he was in the Bulls building and like, the Tribune even reported that he had slowed down his offseason workouts just because of back soreness and all of this.
Right.
Isn't it ironic that Zach LaVine doesn't train in the offseason at the Advocate Center or anywhere in the Midwest, goes back home and actually trains at his, in Seattle, I think? He's got a house in somewhere in Washington with his dad, yeah, and doing all of these crazy crazy workouts that he's been posting on Instagram. But come back even stronger, even faster, and recovered from that ACL last year.
He did that last summer and looked pretty darn good, and did so not in the Advocate Center. So, you know, I know the Bulls are very proud of how much money they spent on their top of the line facilities. And Reinsdorf loves to talk about it. Turns out that LaVine was able to make his body completely right without being in the Advocate Center. Also, similar note, about a week from now, Jimmy Boylan's off to Finland to go visit Lowry. Maybe he's going to go to Finland to tell Lowry that he should be at the Advocate Center instead of home in Finland with, you know, his girlfriend and their son. Because, you know, you got to be in the Advocate Center.
How much do you think that pisses John Paxson off? That Zach LaVine's like, nah, man, I'm not going to stay in Chicago for the summer. Like, I'll come back after summer league, guys will get back here in August and start to play together and work together. But you think that, like, low key kind of pisses John Paxson off?
I don't know. What do you think would piss him off more? The fact that LaVine insists on doing his own thing in the offseason, or the fact that you, me, and everybody in the fan base cracks jokes like this about how it's very important that they're in the Advocate Center?
Well, it's just, man, it goes all back to, and I take it from the player's mouth. It's like Will Perdue said this, I think about a year ago, talking, and maybe it was this past season, whether it was on radio or a podcast, but I know it definitely came from him, and just saying from his time playing with Paxson, he always wanted those guys to be together. And that was what he felt like kept those teams strong back in the 90s, was constantly playing together and being around each other, being in Chicago specifically. So I wonder if he continues to take that mentality. It seems like he does, because he wants everybody to be here in Chicago working out at the Advocate Center, as opposed to being all around the country. But I mean, man, it's 2019. These guys can hop on a flight and be there in 6 hours and work out together if they want. So I don't think it's as big of a deal as it once was. So hopefully Paxson has relaxed a little bit on that idea that they need to be in Chicago working together all summer long.
Right. And I mean, honestly, and this might just be digging up old worms, but when you think back just a couple of years ago when it was the three alpha season and some of the infighting and the disrespect and the distrust that existed between Dwayne Wade and the younger guys on the roster, where he was supposed to come in and be this veteran mentor and this leader and all this stuff. And then also the Nico and Bobby fight where, hey, Nico was off doing his own thing in the off season, playing internationally. He wasn't in the Advocate Center, in the building, in our facility, as Paxson likes to say. And Bobby and Nico were fighting for the same spot, for the same starting spot. And that was, you know, certainly part of the kindle that led to the explosion between those two. And then later on in the season, the explosion between Wade and the younger players on the team saying, hey, we were here working together all off season long. You just kind of like show up midsummer because you wanted to stick it to your other team. And hey, here I am. I'm the king of Chicago. This is my city. I run this bitch. And the young guys were like, well, Wade wasn't working in our building all summer. Well, so what's that about? So like this obsession that Paxson has and Gar as well, and Reinsdorf too, about you stay in the Advocate Center, work in our building. Our facilities are great. Our players have to maximize everything that we have to offer and provide for them. And like, it actually led to some pretty ugly stuff that made the culture and the organization look bad. So maybe just take a chill pill on the in our building talk, because it led to some pretty gross stuff in the recent past.
In our building. I love that. This is just so funny. Oh my God. It's like he thinks that they have to go by train to get to these guys, or have to like take horse and buggy to places. This is like, it's ridiculous. So, yeah, obviously very disappointing for Carter, but really, at least it happened in the offseason where he can rest, recover, and he's not going to miss any actual games that mean things. So hopefully he gets back to training camp at 100% and no hiccups beyond that. So shout out to Carter, Wendell Carter. Hopefully he gets healthy and recovers faster than we think. So with that, let's switch gears, Matt, a little bit here. Let's talk about some of the rumors that are going around to kind of wrap up the episode. Chris Dunn for Justin Holiday has been a one that's continued to go around over the last 24, 48 hours. What do you think about this? reacquiring our guy who landed us probably the best return in fleecing the Memphis Grizzlies last year for him, about a Justin Holiday for Chris Dunn swap.
When I first heard this report, I just couldn't help but laugh. Like, really? Really? I know that we're looking for a Chris Dunn trade right now. Some Bulls fans think we're giving up on him too soon. But just based on everything that we've heard this team say, and then just half-assedly try to cover up for how much they are not on board with Chris Dunn sticking around. It's like, at this point, let's just be done with it. So of all of the possible names and of all of the possible teams, for a Chris Dunn, Justin Holiday player swap to be the first thing that has been reported to actually have some legs to it, it was just too perfect. It was just too deliciously perfect. I also thought about our pal Fred and how it must have just driven him absolutely crazy, like the biggest Justin Holiday hater in the world. I mean, but to me, like, I think that even in the span of this being reported and us talking about it now, like, it might be dead because the Grizz did sign Tyus Jones to an offer sheet. So, you know, he isn't theirs yet. You know, there's a chance that Minnesota matches that and keeps him around. But if Tyus Jones is the, you know, the way that the Grizzlies address starting over and adding some more depth to their backcourt to go along with Ja, then you no longer are interested in Chris Dunn. At least that's the logic, the way I see it.
True. And also, too, they have to make a decision on DeLon Wright, who they acquired from Toronto in that Marc Gasol deal. And DeLon Wright is low-key like a guy that's still halfway decently young and can be a really solid point guard. We were talking about him as a potential free agent signing. I remember back probably about 6 months ago. He reminds me a lot of Chris Dunn, DeLon Wright does. So I'd be interested to see what they do with him, as well as, like, we have to remember, they have Ja Morant now, so they're really just looking for a backup. And if they sign Tyus Jones to an offer sheet and Minnesota lets him go and doesn't match that, then we're looking at this pretty much being dead. But I'm not surprised that they're interested in Justin Holiday, just because I was telling you this off mic as well. This past season, Justin Holiday graded out to be one of the top 10 perimeter defenders in the NBA, which is probably a surprise to a lot of people, but that one specific key is something that the Bulls have been pretty terrible at, is defending the three. And he also had that weird, wild offensive explosion in three-pointers to start the season here, and then he was just god-awful. It was like a switch was flipped as soon as he went to Memphis. He was one of the worst players in the NBA. So I wonder if that's what they're looking at. And over the last 2 years, having Holiday here is kind of a spark plug off the bench. And now you would only have to play him in limited minutes. We wouldn't have Jim Boylan throwing him out there playing him 42 minutes a night.
Right. And that's what I've seen from most Bulls fans who, you know, are aware of what this roster is right now and the player that Justin Holiday is. It's like, look, this wouldn't be the actual worst thing in the world. It would be hilarious. Let's bring Holiday in for a third stint with the Bulls. As, you know, like Kirk Heinrich and then some. But like, if he were clearly coming in a reduced role, significantly reduced role, because we were talking about before him being traded, Justin Holiday being this team's leader in minutes per game, which, like, no. You're rebuilding and Justin Holiday is your team's leading player in minutes? Hell to the no. So I think the reality is that this would be a significantly less, a significantly reduced role for Holiday were that to go around. And honestly, to me at this point, I'm more excited to see, expectations are low, ceiling is low as far as, you know, what kind of crazy jump we might see this year, but I'd rather see Chandler Hutchison get some minutes and let us figure out if he's a player worth keeping around. You know, let's see, does Denzel Valentine actually bring something to the table this season as a combo guard / small forward? You can bring it off the bench for some reliable scoring and some 3-point shooting. Because to me, like, I would rather see either of those things happen than Justin Holiday getting his third stint and playing meaningful minutes for this team. But again, like, if bottom line, it gets Chris Dunn off this roster and cleans up your messy point guard situation and gets an unhappy guy out of your locker room, like, even in that sense, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see what the depth of the Bulls is in terms of, like, backup reserve forwards and, like, who would be playing over him. because you have Porter and Hutchison, which you know are going to be taking up most of the time. Thad Young can actually play the three if you need him to. He played, I think, 42% of his minutes at the three with the Pacers last year. So he's a guy that can switch between the three and the four. You also have two, in terms of forwards, you have Markkanen on the roster too, obviously. And then you have a lot of switchable guys at guard and even guys that could probably step down and play at the three. So even if you did make this move, I think Holiday in a pinch would probably be in roles where you only play in 10 or 12 minutes a night to give guys a breather, which I don't think would be that bad. But for a Chris Dunn for Justin Holiday trade, I'm completely out on that. I think that's just basically trading Chris Dunn because you want him off the roster, as opposed to, you know what, he's probably more valuable than trading him for a vet wing that's only going to play 12 minutes a night. So obviously, yeah, you know my feeling than everybody
the same
else.
Guy that the Bulls got 2 second-round picks for and Wayne Selden, and we were like, wow, we can't believe we got all of that for Justin Holiday.
It's crazy. I mean, I get the whole thing of bringing him into training camp done and fighting it out with Kobe White and Archie and Satoransky for minutes, all of these guys. But at the same time, man, we're talking about former fifth overall pick, one of the main pieces in the Butler deal. And honestly, looking at his stats weren't that bad last year. Like, I think people shit on Chris Dunn more than he actually deserves for last year. Last year was very inconsistent. I get that, but his stats aren't really that bad, man. And to trade him for basically peanuts, I think is just dumb. I think it's a dumb idea.
I mean, even when he was healthy and playing, he was a point guard who was supposed to be a starting point guard who went like a span of 2.5 months without attempting a single goddamn free throw. So, like, you can talk about Chris Dunn being disrespected and people saying, just sell low on him, be done with it, and that being disrespectful. Okay, fine. Maybe you're being disrespectful to a guy who was a number 5 overall pick. But maybe that's also telling you something, that the Bulls were wrong to be obsessed with this guy and almost trading Jimmy for him when he was coming out of Providence in the 2016 draft and then trading for him a year later. And maybe it was just Tibbs and the Bulls were the only people in the NBA who really thought that this guy's ceiling was that high, and they were wrong. And to me, you know, if you sell Chris Dunn, the challenge now becomes maybe he is worth more than that. Maybe he's a guy who he still has his, you know, his bird's rights and is on his rookie deal and is certainly more valuable than an aging vet like Justin Holiday in a one-player swap because he still has the potential. He's old for a player with his little experience, but he's still on a rookie deal. To me, the Bulls did themselves no favors by constantly being exactly the opposite of subtle when it came to how they felt about Chris Dunn. All of the talk about, he's not working hard enough. We need to challenge him. He can't stay healthy. He's got to stay on the court. We're going to go address the point guard situation in the draft. They did that. We're going to draft the point guard situation in free agency. They did that too. Everything that they have done and said about Chris Dunn since acquiring him has undercut his trade value on the market right now. So if they're struggling to come up with a trade for the guy, it's their own damn fault.
Agreed with you. You know, like you said, multiple press conferences, interviews, the way that they've talked about Chris Dunn has just pretty much diminished his value. So that sucks. But, and then even John Paxson on ESPN 1000 a couple days ago talking about, you know, saying if Chris Dunn is still on this roster and talking about uncertainties with what his future is like, being kind of vague about it. But Chris Dunn is in Las Vegas this past week to see the guys play in summer league. And most guys are going to Vegas. If you're around and you don't have shit to do, most guys are going to Vegas. So we saw a lot of players there, which good for the NBA on that. On a side note, is like, get everybody together in one place and you'll get more attention. You'll get more news and you get players to actually come there and make this an event. So good on the NBA for getting everybody in Vegas.
Including the new LA rivalry. I saw one of those games, you know, LeBron and AD were hanging out, and then, you know, Pat Bev and some Lakers or some Clippers came up and, you know, a couple of quick handshakes here and there. But somebody noticed, like, dude, Pat Bev didn't even look LeBron in the eyes. Like, Pat Bev's already just so locked into that new rivalry that exists in Los Angeles that everybody should be so excited for it.
So funny. So damn funny. Last thing real quick on Dunn. If the Grizzlies deal is dead, what about sending him to the Clippers? They need a backup point guard.
Yeah, sure.
What if they did straight up for Jerome Robinson, who was a former number 12 pick last year, number 13 pick. So he was a lottery guy last year.
I mean, yeah, I'd be fine with that. I think it would be a move that would benefit both teams. I do like, you know, I think you'd be just kind of taking a flyer on a guy who hasn't had an opportunity to show a whole lot, but is still young. You know, he's 22, might offer some more depth at, you know, that two guard, maybe some small ball, small forward stuff, which is kind of what this team is looking for. And in addition to looking to get off of Chris Dunn and move on from that, that's the part of their roster that they hadn't really addressed yet, which is why, you know, they were talking about adding Justin Holiday, like we were just talking about, because not only does it solve your Chris Dunn problem and your backlog at the point guard problem, but it addresses the position that we all thought that they were going to address this summer that they haven't yet. You know, they added the depth at point guard by adding White in the draft and, you know, Satoransky in the sign-in trade. And they added their front court depth and their veteran leadership guy when they signed Thaddeus Young. But the other thing that we thought they were going to do, and probably use that that room exception contract on that they still had available, that $4.7 million, was signing a veteran wing to add more shooting off the bench. Instead, they added more front court depth with that Luke Kornet signing, which is in itself more shooting. You know, he's a seven footer, but he's a stretch who can shoot 36-37% behind the 3-point line. But that was that one spot that they didn't really address on the roster that they thought they would.
Yeah, it's interesting to see them and the signings that they made. I'm glad that they made the Luke Kornet signing, taking a risk on a young guy, and seems like a dude that can be competent enough to play backup minutes, and anything's better than Felicio at this point. And I don't think, like we were talking about yesterday, I don't think Gafford is ready to fill that role just yet. So potential upside in Luke Kornet. But yeah, maybe a Jerome Robinson for Chris Dunn deal would not be the worst thing in the world. I mean, he didn't get all that much playing time last year. No, he played 33 games.
Yeah, 33 games and a shade under 10 minutes per game when he did make an appearance. And in those appearances, just 40% from the field and 31.6 from behind the 3-point line. So definitely a project, definitely a flyer of a guy who just, you don't have a whole lot of tape on him in his 1 year in the NBA so far. But again, to me, it's just as much about solving the Dunn issue as it is about getting a value in return. Maybe some people out there think that's crazy and disrespectful to Dunn and you're selling super low on him. But if that's the case, whatever. To me, I'm more concerned about getting Dunn and that whole situation taken care of. I don't love Jerome Robinson. I don't think he's going to be some fantastic player. He certainly seemed to be underwhelming in the limited minutes he got last year, but at this point, and again, it goes back to the Bulls undercutting Dunn's value with the way that they've talked about him. You gotta do something.
Yeah, because I can't think of anything else. Like the Clippers roster, there isn't much on there, and most of the guys that they're going to want to keep. So Jerome Robinson seems like the only like likely move that they could make. So yeah, interesting. We'll see what happens with Chris Dunn, and yeah, we'll find out. It'll be interesting over the next couple of weeks to see if they move him or not. Last thing, just real quick to clean up, Shaq Harrison and Walt Lemon Jr., Bulls let them go. Still in the summer league team, so still getting a good look at them. Obviously giving them playing time, too, to kind of showcase them to other NBA teams. But really quick, I just think Shaq Harrison and Walt Lemon will find their way to another NBA team. And Shaq Harrison for sure should be on an NBA team next year. What he showed us in the games that he played from November to the end of the season, dude should be on an NBA roster, being able to efficiently back up somebody at the one or the two.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that for the most part, watching him last season, he can't hit a shot to save his life. And, you know, it doesn't bring a whole lot to the offensive end. But even as just a defensive specialist, the guy deserves to be on an NBA roster somewhere, because if you look at some of the, you know, some of the advanced stats and the metrics about what Shaq Harrison was doing as a disruptive force on the defensive end for the Bulls last year, it was right up there with some of the elite defenders in the league. And he is that good. And he's a guy who can play a couple of different positions. He can guard multiple positions. And I think that he will end up on a roster somewhere. You know, Walt Lemon Jr., it was a fun story last year when there weren't that many fun stories. A Chicago product who, you know, made his way up from the, you know, the G League and being a guy that nobody knew a whole lot about, and gave us some minutes when the Bulls were desperate for some minutes last season. But of the two, I would say if somebody is more deserving and more likely to end up on a real roster this coming season, it would be Shaq Harrison. And I know that there are a lot of Shaq Harrison fans out there that were very upset that that they had to waive him to make room for the Thaddeus Young signing.
Yes, For me, I was hoping that the Bulls were going to find a way to keep him in the mix, just because, like you were saying, the defensive stuff, being one of the quickest NBA players too on the defensive side last year. I think he was the second quickest out of anybody. His ability to just get his hands in passing lanes too, and just being a scrappy 120% type of guy, I think is what this Bulls team loves, and what they, why they signed Ryan Arcidiacono too. I think he's the same level of scrappy type of guy and high basketball IQ. And I think both those dudes showed it. So it's too bad that they couldn't keep both of those guys around. But
right. But I think you and I had said, you know, earlier on when we were figuring out who stays and who goes with this roster, that it would be pretty surprising to see both Archie and Shaq Harrison stay, and that they would probably keep one of those two guys, but not both. And that's exactly how things shaked out.
So Walt Lemon Jr. can still sign a two-way deal. So I would see him as maybe a potential project for other teams, and maybe the Bulls can bring him in on a two-way deal if they want. But yeah, Shaq Harrison most likely, I think, will get an NBA contract. And Walt Lemon probably a two-way deal maybe. I mean, he's still there up in age, though. Going to be 27 when the season starts. So maybe there isn't room for Walt Lemon Jr., but... yeah, I just wanted to clean that up really quick. And we'll see what happens the Bulls do with their other two-way contracts. They signed somebody already, Alex Makoka, to a two-way deal. So yeah, they still got one two-way deal out there to give away. And I wonder if they bring Raleigh Alkins back on that two-way deal, or if they just say, you know what, we saw enough of him, we're good on that.
Yeah, I think you would have seen more of Raleigh Alkins last season if they were higher on him, because as the Bulls were desperate for bodies, people kept saying, you know, where's Raleigh Alkins? Why isn't this dude getting any... And much more playing time. And I think that was your answer right there.
Yeah, and that's because he was averaging like 11 points per game and shooting like in the low 40s in the G League. So that's why we didn't see much of him.
Not great.
Yeah, not great. Not great at all. But that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up, text messages, voicemails, anything you got for us for mailbag tomorrow. And we didn't get to one thing that I wanted to talk about, so maybe we can tie that in to tomorrow's episode. But hit us up at 331-979-1369, place to drop all of your texts and all of your voicemails. Definitely get those, and we'll get to as many as we can on tomorrow's episode. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Again, get those voicemails, those text messages in at 331-979-1369. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Strip you, they turn you over, they run it down your throat.
He's bigger than I just didn't realize how big he was, so you get on top of him.
See, these two, man.
Come on, man.
Nobody laughing.
Come on, man.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com